Hello and welcome to the Iron Library episode 16. I'm Jo from Pages of the Moon.
And I'm Laura from Laura Liz Buckley.
I cannot believe that it's been 4 months.
Pretty impressive.
Of pure lovely recording.
4 months, huh? Wow. That's wild.
So thank you for sticking with us. Yeah. So if you're super new to the Island Library podcast, firstly, welcome. And second of all, the general running of today's podcast is I, Jo, will start with the synopsis of my book before handing over to Laura, who will then say the synopsis of her book. Then the turn will come back to me and I will pitch my book. So I will pick parts maybe of the synopsis or of the story that I think are most intriguing to try and persuade yourselves and Laura to pick my book for maybe an Island Library read. I'll then go down and break down the book spoiler free as much as possible because this is me and I'm awful. We will then do a seashell rating, which is similar to a star rating, but it's seashells because we're on an island and, you know, starfish are hard to catch. And then the all important question will be asked whether it will be taking a slot on the Island Library shelf that is dedicated to me. I only get 10 places and some of them are already filled up, as you will know. And then I will pass the baton over to my lovely co-host, Laura, who will do the very same. She'll pitch, discuss seashell rate and answer the all important question. But as well as that, stay tuned because right at the end we have Jo's random question of the week. And this week it's insightful AF. So, what did you read this week, Laura?
This week, I'm just picking it up, I read Surrender Your Sons by Adam Sass. How about you?
I read a debut, and it is The Opposite of Always, and I believe it was out last year, so it's a little bit old. But yeah, to kick things off, I'm going to read out my synopsis for Opposite of Always. This one is quite a shocking synopsis. It took me by surprise when I first found it, so here we go. When Jack and Kate meet at a party, bonding until sunrise over their mutual love of Fruit Loops and their favourite flicks, Jack knows he's falling hard. Soon, she's meeting his best friend, Gillian and Frenny, and Kate wins them over as easily as she did Jack. But then Kate dies, and their story should end there. Yet Kate's death sends Jack back to the beginning, the moment they first meet, and Kate's there again. Healthy, happy, and as charming as ever. Jack isn't sure if he's losing his mind. Still, if he has a chance to prevent Kate's death, he's going to take it, even if that means believing in time travel. However, Jack will learn that his actions are not without consequences, and when one choice turns deadly for someone else close to him, he has to figure out what he's willing to do to save the people he loves.
The blurb sounds very exciting. I have actually read that book as well, so it's fun. I'm looking forward to hearing you talking about it.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Right. The blurb then for Surrender Your Sons. Connor Major's summer break is turning into a nightmare. His SAT scores bombed, the old man he delivers meals to died, but when he came out to his religious zealot mother, she had him kidnapped and shipped off to a secluded island. His final destination, Nightlight Ministries, a conversion therapy camp that will be his new home until he changes. But Connor's troubles are only beginning. At Nightlight, everyone has something to hide, from the campers to the converted staff and KG camp director, and it quickly becomes clear that no one is safe. Connor plans to escape and bring the other kidnapped teens with him. But first, he's exposing the camp's horrible truths for what they are and taking this place down.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a journey of a blurb that was.
Seriously.
Can't even imagine. My face was literally like my mouth dropped and then I frowned. Yeah. Then my eyebrow cocked up and I can't even imagine what that expression must have looked like to anybody else. But it was... Yeah, I can't wait for us to break that one down. I'm really excited to hear what that one's all about.
Yeah, well, you'll have to wait there, won't you? Because it's your turn first.
Yeah, so I guess now it's my turn to pitch. I'm so awful at pitching. I don't know why. I tried really, really hard this week, so I'm hoping this one sells it.
Okay.
So this is a pitch for Opposite of Always. A modern love story meets Groundhog Day. Jack is in love with his best friend, who is in love with their other best friend. But then Kate walks into Jack's life, literally. She wins over everyone in his life, making Jack's life have more meaning than before. And then she dies. But then Jack wakes up and he meets Kate again, and he realises he may have a chance of saving her. A sweet romance with teenage mistakes and huge consequences.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Nice pitch.
I nailed that one, I would like to say. So, just to give a good rundown of the first sort of chapter or two of this book, just to really set the scene, because a lot of it is given away in both the pitch and the lovely blurb. Jack, his name's Jack King, and he's adorable, and he's just in love with his best friend, Gillian. and he's part of like a little trio of best friends. So there's Jack, Gillian and Franny. Gillian and Franny are dating at the time of the book starts, and he's just in love with her and he has been for years, and he's just never had the guts to say anything, but also because he doesn't really want to upset Franny. So he has a lot on his plate anyway. But then he goes to visit a college and he sort of ends up at a college party. He's sitting on the stairs, absolutely hopelessly in love, staring at Gillian, who is the life of the party, when Kate walks down the stairs and basically sat in the way. So she makes a comment about that he's in the way, and she and him spark up a little bit of like bantery conversation. It all seems really well. Life seems great. They spend the entire night together. Not in that way. Not in the winky wonk kind of way. They literally go and eat cereal and they just talk. It's just one of those nights that, you know, when you know you've met someone really, really important. It was sort of one of those nights. It was very beautifully written. And life seems to be going pretty good for Jack from that point. He quickly gets over Gillian because of Kate. His friendship with Franny seems solid. Gillian seems very jealous. We don't really know why. Dum, 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 dum. And then Jack, being the hopeless romantic and person that he is, asks Kate if she'd like to come to his prom with him, which she accepts, but never turns up. She doesn't answer her phone. We don't know what's happened. And then she does get in touch with him. I think it's a couple of hours later when he hasn't gone to prom himself. And she apologises but doesn't tell him why. Leaves a lot to the imagination. Obviously, we know from the blurb what's going to happen. And I was kind of expecting that to be the moment, but it's not. Lovely listeners, it's not. Then some other things sort of happen. And basically, Jack gets a random call a couple of weeks later, and he rushes to the hospital where he manages to have a conversation with Kate, but unfortunately she passes. And this very weird thing happens as soon as she does. He sort of has a seizure, passes out, and he wakes up back on the staircase. And that is all I will say. That's sort of where I'm going to leave the breakdown of the book. I will say that life isn't all sweet and roses the next time either. And there's a really interesting thing that said really late at the book, but actually how many times he ends up having to go back and how many times he basically sort of in little finger marks, but fails. But some of the really interesting points about this book that were really beautiful to read was, I work in hematology cancer, and it was really, I don't want to say nice because nice is not the word, but it was really interesting to read about a disease that I know about and have someone in a book live with it and unfortunately have such a tough time with it, which is sickle cell. It's not very widely known, so I really appreciate that this book tackled such an important disease that really needs a lot more being spread about it. And it's really interesting in the way that the book handles the big things that happen to Kate, because that's what's wrong with Kate. Kate has a sickle cell condition, and you find out at different parts in the book that other characters have also had it or have the gene for it. And I just think spreading that awareness is super, super important, because there's not a lot that is known about it, and, you know, cures are very minimal, and it's more about controlling symptoms than anything else. So I just thought that was really interesting and not something I initially expected when I picked up the book. So that was really nice. There are a lot of other heavy topics which are handled really, really well and developed perfectly. And I think the author had a good grasp on what topics to pick as well as topics he could comfortably handle, because I didn't feel at any point that any of the problems were dropped, especially in the multiple timelines that ended up occurring. Because obviously we know from the blurb and my pitch that Jack ends up time traveling basically, even though it's a bit more Groundhog Day. But as much as some of these topics come up, they are handled quite well. So one of the big ones is Franny, which is Jack's best friend. His name is Francisco, and his dad has been in prison for what I think we can assume is most of his life, and he gets let out. And Franny has a very difficult and strained relationship with his dad. And also Franny has become somebody that is looked after by his abuela, but I feel like he tries to look after her just as much because Franny's dad isn't around. They have a really interesting and funny nickname for him, but I'm going to leave that for when you read it, because I think the fact that they call it him all the time is just really hilarious. And it's a nice little joke between two best friends who are, I feel like, are more brothers, which is actually something else I really liked and we'll go back to a little bit later. There's also a really interesting discussion about, I want to say, mental health with Gillian's mum. It was kind of hard to grasp exactly what was going off, and I think that was left ambiguous on purpose. But for anybody who knows somebody with a mental health illness or disorder, can recognise a lot of the signs, and knowing that I've had my own issues with mental health, I immediately recognised what Gillian's mum was going through and how difficult of a situation that must have been for Gillian, which is further worsened by the fact that Gillian's dad just goes missing. Like, he just leaves and just doesn't come back. And I just thought that was really interesting to show these two characters that are in Jack's life have so much going off in their own. They've also found one another and are sort of each other's backbone. And yet, both of their feelings towards Jack is that he's got a very perfect life when Jack feels otherwise, because, you know, the grass always seems greener, doesn't it? But Jack's parents are both together. They're happy. They're very in love, which we get a reminder of throughout the book. And I think that's just as important as the characters who have very disruptive family lives as well. So it's a really interesting trio of characters. And none of them feel less talked about than the other in all the separate timelines. And some of Jack's decisions do impact those two friends and the families that come off from that. I didn't get this initially at first, but I kind of liked that it was developed over time, was the relationship between Jack and Franny, because obviously we initially get the relationship between Jack and Gillian, which is that, you know, he's hopelessly in love with her before Kate comes along. And though he has been for years, he appreciates her, I would say, rather than is in love with her, because I don't think he really knows her. But the author also does a really good job of basically highlighting that, so you know that, because, you know, he can't really be in love with somebody he doesn't really know skin deep. Also, the fact that around Jack, he's got his parents who are really, really close also with Franny. And as the book goes on and as the chapters develop, we actually see how close Jack and Franny actually are and how they've been raised. And the fact is that Jack's parents go to all of Franny's games, which I thought was such a beautiful moment in the book. And I don't want to ruin too much about it, but they are very close and they have a very mutual understanding and a mutual love for Franny. There is a beautiful quote, which I won't say, but I think you'll all know when you get to it, which is all about, it comes from the perspective of, I think, Jack's mom. And she says something very off the cuff that Jack mentions. And it's so beautiful. And it's in a not very nice timeline when Jack makes a lot of mistakes. So just keep an eye out for that. But I think you'll recognise it as soon as you'll see it and see what I mean, because I feel like you're meant to gloss over it, but actually it's such a super important moment, and it shows the love that not only these two boys have for one another as best friends, but also the relationship that Jack's parents have with Franny. It's a debut love story from this author, but when I was reading it, and I'm like grinning right now, I don't know if you can tell the difference when someone grins when you're listening, but I'm grinning. But I feel like he had such a good grasp on how a love story is for a teenager that it shocked me when I found out he's not actually a teenager himself. And I thought that was really, really nice. But I think the added twist that really stood out for me was the way that the time travel is introduced, because you sort of get a prologue before the first chapter of a section where you can tell Jack's just appeared and he's just going to go do something, and then he has a seizure, and then you wake up and you're in the first place. So it's like, even as the reader, you're sort of in this Groundhog Day. And having read a lot of romance, I actually think that was one of the best things that I've, that little introduction was one of the best introductions I've read in a really long time, because I already knew I was getting my fingers into a good romance, but this added extra just sort of elevated it a little bit more than I expected. And I think the added bonus of the fact that there were consequences, that it's not just a movie, if that makes sense, like the book kind of felt like someone's real life, because the consequences were so big and so dramatic that it felt like that could actually happen if you did that. Just to go over some of the characters, immediately I love Jack. I thought he was great and I loved his growth, because he starts off as this very naive character who eventually learns from his mistakes. He also at one point gives up massively and just goes out of his way to fail. But even by the end of that timeline, he's figured out that he was being an idiot and he shouldn't have really done that, which I really like. I like the fact that he chose to mess up once, and because all the other times he messes up by accident, and him just going, you know what, effort, I'm just going to mess up. And him feeling all the hurt, because obviously he still remembers all the other timelines, no one else does, and he's just so hurt and so full of grief because he's just having to watch this girl that he keeps falling in love with dying, and he just gives up. And even as he's given up, he's like, why have I actually given up? There's a huge problem with me just continuously giving up. And I thought that was really nice about his character, that he was just willing to grow and willing to fail to grow even more. Gillian, I don't know if I like her or not. I don't know if I was meant to. I feel like when we start and we first meet her, I don't think you're meant to like her because of the way she acts in the car, because there's a car ride that her and Jack share on the way back from their college meetup / party thing. And she gets very jealous and you kind of think, oh, she doesn't really want anybody else on the scene. Like she doesn't want him, but she doesn't want anyone else to want him. And I wasn't sure if I was like bang on the money or not. And then there's a bit of a timeline where Jack, when he purposely tries to fail, and she really gets on my nerves then. So then I was like, right, I don't think I meant to like her, but I don't know why. But it's all made up for by Franny. I thought Franny had such, I don't know, he was like, in a way, Jack's moral compass. I feel like he had more of an effect over how Jack acted than Gillian, the girl he supposedly was in love with. And I also hate that, unfortunately, Jack's decisions affected Franny the most in a lot of the timelines. And while it took Jack a really long time, I think, to realise that, when he does and he tries to correct it, I just thought it was just beautiful. And I just think boys being best friends with another boy and having that level of love is so important in fiction and in real life, but it's important for it to be represented in fiction to show boys that it's okay to have that close relationship. Like, they have a sleepover and it's like the best thing, and they're in like the last year of high school, and yet they're still having that relationship that they had when they were younger. And I just thought that was really beautiful and really organic, and it was really nice that Jack was an only child and Franny was like his adopted brother because of the circumstances. And I just thought that was really beautiful. And now we've got to go to her, my favorite character, Kate. So Kate is the character that I wish I could write. She was beautiful. From the moment she was introduced to the moment, unfortunately, of her passing, she was honestly the most earth-shattering character I think I've ever encountered. She was honestly 100% herself the entire time. I don't feel like in any timeline she differed, but in a good way, because she didn't need to grow. She was the point of growth. But also, it was just how charismatic she was. We didn't get any idea of her appearance. We didn't get that, you know, she was a smoking hottie, and it didn't matter. Her humour carried her entire character. And in fiction, I feel like this representation of a woman, especially from a book that's from a male point of view, is so freaking important. As I was reading it, I just wanted to go and find this author and high-five him, because this is who I want to write more male romance with female counterparts, because I feel like he nailed it. I don't feel like at any point I was misrepresented as a woman. I feel like he handled even the tougher parts of writing a woman, which is our hormones. I gotta say it, we have them. We don't always act, you know, the best with them. But he handled it really, really well as a male author. And on top of that, the relationship between the two was really beautiful to see from the moment they meet and how they sort of grow in each other's world. Because when we meet Kate, we know that she's just got out of a really bad relationship and we don't really know much more than that. And it crops up and you learn more about that relationship. But you can tell that these two were just meant to find one another, but it wasn't in a really annoying, sickly way. So that's Kate in a nutshell. I mean, I could continuously talk about Kate. I could have a podcast about how much I love Kate as a character, but I'm going to stop there before, you know, I bore you all to death. And then obviously we've got to talk about the most important character in the entire book. And Laura's frowning because Laura's like, you've covered like all of them. But Cereal, it's so nice for Cereal to have its moment in fiction. I feel like it's not just a breakfast item, it's a comfort food. And for these two lovebirds, it was the start of a very beautiful relationship, especially Fruity Loops, which I've never had, but I feel like I want to. Laura's looking gobsmacked at me. Okay, are Fruity Loops gluten-free? That's the big question.
I don't think it is gluten-free.
Okay, well, this celiac host can't unfortunately have gluten. So I will have a bowl of Lucky Charms.
Okay.
Maybe that's why I've not had Fruity Loops.
Maybe.
But yeah, for anybody else who's a celiac, Lucky Charms are gluten-free, which is great for all of us. Yeah. Just, they're not sponsoring this, but Lucky Charms do want to... Lucky Charms want to send me a box. I'm like your biggest fan. But anyway, in terms of the plot, I thought the plot was really inventive, and I thought the romance side of things, actually, as much as that was the focus point of the entire book, I actually felt like it wasn't the biggest thing going off, and it was this growth of Jack's character, and it was more of a book about him than it was about him and Kate, which I actually really liked. I liked going into the book thinking, this is going to be some really beautiful time-traveling romance, and then actually coming away from it and thinking, actually, it was so nice that we got so much about this man and his best friend, and his relationship with this girl, and also realizing that sometimes even when the going gets tough, you just got to keep going. There are some absolutely stunning quotes in this book that I just want to ruin for you, but I just can't. I mean, I saved a bunch when I was reading it because I read this one on my Kindle so I could highlight them all without, you know, ruining a book. And it was really beautiful that at the end of it, I flicked through them all and I was grinning from ear to ear and I was thinking, God, what I would love to do to be able to say all of these. And unfortunately, a lot of the more beautiful ones is because Jack got pushed to the near limits of a cliff and he then had a realization. So I don't want to ruin that point, but there are some absolutely stunning writing in this book. Pacing, I thought, was like bang on, as well as the writing itself. I didn't feel like it could have been written any better. And I don't feel like I say that a lot about other books. I may not mention it, but I'm giving credit where credit's due with this book. And I don't think it could have been written any better than it was. It was... I feel bad saying it because there's always growth, isn't there? Like, nothing's ever this. But to me, it was perfect. It was this perfect book that I read on a Saturday night and I didn't feel like I could be doing anything better than reading this book. And I think if you haven't read it, for anybody, you don't have to be a big person into romance. There is so much within this story that'll have you hooked from the moment you start that I think it's a book that's for everybody, even if it is labelled as a romance book. And again, I don't think that can happen with a lot of romance books. I think the benefits of it also being from a male point of view, written by a male, may make people think, oh, is this going to be what I think it's going to be? Because unfortunately, in romance, there's not a huge amount of male authors compared to the females. When you comparatively look at it, it is a female-led genre. But he held his own. I feel like he could give a lot of the female writers a run for his money. So if that has initially ever had you like, should I not? Definitely pick it up because I don't think you'll regret it. When I was reading it, I was trying to think of books that I've read that are like it. And the one that sort of came to mind in the style of reading was What If It's Us, which is by Becky Albertalli and Adam Silvera. I feel like those two together, when they write in the same sort of style as James was coming across as. And I feel like if you're a big fan of either of those two authors' works, I feel like...
Justin is the author.
Thank you. I don't know where I got James from. I'm just trying to stare at my bookshelf, so I might pick James up by mistake. So if you're fans of either of those two authors' work, then I think you're really going to like Justin's work. There are probably 1,000 other comparisons that I could make to say, oh, if you like this, you're definitely going to like this. But for me, Becky and Adam's work really stood out when I read that book, and I feel the same about Justin's with this. Just to make a little note, because when I was doing my research for this podcast, I realised he actually has a book coming out in September 2020, and I've just pre-ordered it. So I will put a pre-order link or a link to Waterstones and Amazon in the show notes, because if you have read this and you're thinking, yes, I completely agree, then go and get his next book so that he can keep writing and keep bringing us this great fiction. Yeah, overall, really enjoyed the book. So, Laura, do you have any questions for my breakdown?
One thing that I'd just be interested to know your take on, because I don't know if you remember, but I made this comparison when I read The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, that book worked really hard to explain the time traveling shenanigans. The opposite of Always, there's, from what I remember at least, no stated explanation. It doesn't go into the mechanics of like why it's happening. Obviously, Jack experiments with various stuff when he's like, as you would when you're in a time loop, you sort of test the boundaries, but there's no sense of somebody making this happen. Or did that bother you, or were you cool with that when you read it?
I feel like I was really cool with it, but mainly because the explanation I don't think was needed, because you could clearly see that him and Kate, I feel like when I said that you could tell that these two people are really meant to be together, I think you would have got that without the Groundhog Day aspect to the story, because of just the way that they met and just how their relationship literally hit the ground running and ran. But I feel like because you can tell that they're really connected, I don't feel like you really needed much of an explanation once you got into the second, you know, like when he meets her the second time, you kind of get, because why would he have only gone back to that moment when he first meets her? So I feel like it is explained without explaining it. And I feel like that was enough. I feel like we both said when we read The Seven Deaths that it tried too hard to try and make everything plausible. Mm. And I think sometimes just going with the easy option and just seeing what you can get away with actually works. And I think in this book, it did do that.
Sure, yes. I felt similarly that I loved that the opposite of always didn't waste time going into stuff that I was like, as a reader, I didn't care about. I was 100% there for the story that Justin Reynolds was telling. And I was like, you know, this mechanic is, there's enough internal kind of logic and consistency to it that I was happy to just let that be backdrop to the story.
Yes.
But I just wanted to know whether it bothered you, because when I finished it, I was like, I don't know if I was kind of making excuses for it because I loved it so much that I was like, oh, it's fine, they don't need to do that. Or if other people reading it would also agree that he didn't need to try and explain stuff beyond what was already in place.
Yeah, I just feel like he did such a good job that it didn't matter. It didn't even matter if there were rules and Jack needed to play to them, because I don't feel like we needed to know. I don't feel like it would have impacted the story, but I'm glad that there was not a huge chapter of someone coming down from, you know, some smoke and just having to explain everything to him. It was just about him and Kate, Franny and Gillian.
Sure. Do you have a justice award to give out?
Do you know what? No, I feel like everyone was perfectly handled in a really lovely, I don't want to say like with a bow on them, but they all did. I don't feel like at the end I had any questions about where anybody ended up, and we didn't even get a round off chapter sort of thing. We didn't get a, in 5 years, this is what happens or anything. We get a really satisfying ending. Yeah, I just feel like everyone was handled really well and everyone got what they deserved, which sounds really ominous, but what I just mean is just everyone ended exactly where they were meant to end. And I don't feel like there was any justice. Maybe a small award, but not a justice award, like a hero award to Franny Zabuela.
Oh yeah,
just because she was just a remarkable female character who barely got a lot of airtime, but she was just this hardworking abuela who's trying to take care, just trying to look after everybody. And yeah, I just feel like she needs a good award. And some money, if anyone wants to donate any money to abuela. I mean, obviously she's fictional, so don't, like,
donate it to our Patreon and we'll pass it on.
Wink, wink. So, no justice award this week. I feel like Justin did a really good job with all of his characters. There's no threads left. They were all handled really, really well.
It was so good, wasn't it? I feel like that really sets the... Also, I took it... When I read it, this is just a fun fact for you, really. I took a picture and tagged him in it on Instagram, and he replied to say, like, oh, I'm glad you liked it.
That's so amazing. Isn't that the most heartwarming thing?
So I love him forever, and I can't wait to read his new book, although I can't now remember what it is.
So, now we've done a little roundup. It's time for my seashell rating. I'm not even going to bang on the desk and pretend the drums are here, because I don't want to, like, break the microphone on top of everything else that's occurring in my industry. But I think we all guessed it from, you know, my adoringness of this book, but it's getting 5 seashells. It's the book I wish I'd wrote.
It's so good.
That's the award I want to give it. It's the book I wish I'd wrote, the book that I wish I'd come up with the ideas of, and the characters I wish that lived within me.
It's also, there's something about reading a book and being like, oh, I hope everyone reads this.
Yeah.
I hope teenagers read it, because there's so much great stuff about, there's just some beautiful relationships, and, you know, people mess up and they have to work out how to make it better, and that's great. And as kind of a model of, like, the romantic relationship between Jack and Kate, that was really lovely and really beautifully written. There's just so much. I'm like, I just think it's such a great book.
It is such a great book. So, ask me.
Okay. I'm going to ask you the question. It's time to find out. Would you take the opposite of your island library?
Yes! 1,000 times yes! God, I want to marry this book. This is going to be the only book that will survive the entire island with me.
You know what? I tell you one thing that you didn't mention is that most of the characters are black.
Yes.
And it obviously doesn't, like, it doesn't make a difference to the story, because it's, the story is the story and the characters are, like, teenagers doing their teenage stuff. But it's also really nice to see a story where you've got just black teens falling in love.
Yeah. It was just full of lovely, genuine, heartfelt POCs everywhere. Because I think Franny is a Latina.
Yes, Latinx.
Yeah, Latinx.
I believe.
Yes. So yeah, so it's just a beautiful black POC romance all the way through, and it's just stunning, and I'm just so happy to have read it and for it to come onto the Island Library. And Justin, I don't know why you'd ever be listening to our podcast. I mean, it is amazing. So if you're not, what are you doing? But also, if you do ever come across it and think, oh my God, they're discussing my book, this book will be forever saved on the Island Library. Like, never fear about it being bumped off the shelf, because I think this might be even be named my favourite book of 2020.
Ooh.
That's the award that this book gets. Just because it was just so brilliantly done, and mm-hmm. I mean, not that I was purposely trying to find anything that, you know, was wrong with it, but even as sure. I was reading it, I was like, ooh, is this going to be sorted? Yep, this is sorted. Everything was like ticked off by the end of it, and there was no stone left unturned. So,
good
but
stuff.
Yeah, that was the opposite of always. And it was just an absolute aww. Pleasure to read. So I will hand the baton over to you.
Happy days. Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, I read Surrender Your Sons, which is also YA, although definitely a darker book than Opposite of Always in terms of like subject matter, as was indicated in the blurb. But yeah. I'm going to pitch first of all. So Connor Major came out to his mum this summer, and it was a disaster. She's deep into the church in their small town in Illinois, and she's also convinced his gayness is a way of shirking responsibility for his ex-girlfriend's baby. Desperate to get Connor to change his ways, his mum has him spirited away to Nightlight, a conversion camp on a secluded island. There, Connor will discover that Nightlight has some seedy secrets of its own, secrets which, if they got out, could bring the whole operation tumbling down. He just has to keep his head long enough to get to the bottom of it all.
Wow. There's a lot going off in this book.
Oh, I mean, I haven't even scratched the surface of what this book is dealing with. The story's told in first person present tense, so you are right in Connor's head for the whole story. And there are certainly worse protagonists to be up close and personal with for a ride like this. He's very impulsive, and he often makes decisions which are hasty or downright awful for the situation he's in, and you kind of want to scream at him, but he's also really funny, and he's very brave, and he's really empathetic a lot of the time, which is lovely. Despite being in some really knotty situations, despite the conflict, even in the early chapter, the first chapter where you're seeing the kind of conflict between him and his mum, and she's sort of torn between denial of his sexuality and a desire for him to change it. he still wants so badly for them to be on the same side again. His dad's not really in the picture. He was around for a while, but then he went off to live in England. The book's set in America, as I said, in Illinois at first. And yeah, so it has kind of been him and his mum against the world, and you can see that he's really sad to have lost that as a result of coming out. There's a lot going on in the story, as you picked up on and as I kind of mentioned. So it's part romance, part thriller, part mystery, part comedy. And there's some tension between those things at times, it does have to be said. It's very fast-paced as a book. You are swept through it. Sometimes that's a problem. So the timeline for the whole book stretches credulity a bit, like the time that it's supposed to have happened over. And I think it would have benefited from slowing down at some moments, from taking a bit longer with things, from taking a pause to breathe once in a while. It's hard for me to go too hard on that because it is, I mean, part of what makes it such an exciting read is that it is breathlessly quick. But I don't think it would have been a hindrance, and I think it maybe would have made it stronger in some parts if the author had, like, let things slow down for a minute. It's not, I mean, that said, it's not really a realistic book in some ways. Like, it's obviously a very kind of deliberately over the top in certain ways, and the timeline could be part of that, and maybe that's just part of what the author's going for. I know it's been through several iterations. At one point it was like a fantasy type thing, at one point it was for adults rather than young adults, and so I wonder if maybe kind of what was settled on was this not quite realism, partly because it didn't start off as realism. The kind of the important stuff in terms of character interactions, in terms of the way that Connor reacted to situations, I thought that was grounded in something that felt real. So it wasn't like I was sitting through the whole thing rolling my eyes thinking this is ridiculous. But every so often the characters would reference how long it had been since they arrived on the island, and I'd think, wait, really? How is that? It feels like it's been like four times that long. So, you know, I kind of had mixed feelings about that. While I'm in the nitpick zone, I'm just going to do one more thing that bugged me, which was there were some really odd choices of wording. So, like, right on the first page when Connor's talking about the fact, so his mum's confiscated his phone since finding out that he has a boyfriend, and he's kind of trying to convince her to give it back. And he has this quote, you know, "This battle for my sanity has reached D-Day levels of slaughter."
What?
And yeah, I think it's a really inventive analogy, but also part of me is like, I don't know if it 100% makes sense, because a battle for sanity I get, but like what are the armies? Who's being slaughtered? Because his sanity hasn't been slaughtered. Is it pieces of his sanity? Like, that's where my brain went when I read that.
I think it's also really tough to make a comparison to such a notable date in history that...
Yeah, there's that too.
that wasn't great for a lot of people. So, yeah, I don't know if you can really go too much on that.
Sure. And so there were just a few things. So another one that I thought was less loaded from a historical point of view, but there's a line, again, it's within about the first 20 pages, so there's no spoiler here, but "my chest suffocates with paranoia." And I'm like, you can suffocate? Can your chest suffocate? Your chest can tighten, causing you to suffocate. Like, it's so not a big deal. And there were just a few of those where I'd see them and my editor brain would be like, I would have taken issue with that. Then again, Connor has a really distinct personality, and I don't want to take that away from him. And, you know, it's entirely possible that the author was making these kind of like slightly eccentric comparison choices and this heightened use of language to further convey the fact that Connor is, you know, he's very dramatic. He kind of barrels into ideas and decisions without always fully thinking it through. So, you know, I don't think that it was necessarily without reason. It bugged me occasionally, but it wasn't like a deal breaker. I'm just, while I was already nitpicking, I thought I'd go with that one as well. and other than those things, I did really enjoy the writing. I think you get, like I said, you get a great sense of Connor as a character. And although there are quite a few other characters, particularly once he gets to Nightlight, you get introduced to a lot of new people quite quickly. And you don't always have a lot of time to spend with them to kind of differentiate them. But I think the author did a really good job at quickly highlighting who was who and giving you a strong sense of who each individual character was. So even when you didn't see them all the time, you never mixed them up. They were completely distinct, and I think that was really well done. So the first time I read it, I was actually too kind of swept up in the story to make proper notes. So I actually had to like go back and flick through and decide what I actually wanted to say about it. And while I was doing that, I also discovered that there are some nice little breadcrumbs early on that point towards things that Connor will have to unravel later. So that's another evidence of kind of a really thoughtfully written book. So I liked that. Just to go back to kind of the plot setup and where you are when you start the story, Connor, like I said, has recently come out, and his mum's reaction to that, obviously not good. Now, she thinks that possibly part of the motivation for quote-unquote claiming to be gay is that his ex-girlfriend has just had a baby. The baby's not his, though, but everyone thinks that it is because they, I think, were together when it was conceived. But he explains what's going on with that. He also explains why it's important that he doesn't say who the father actually is. It's not like a major plot point, but I think it was a kind of nicely wrapped up detail. And also I really like that, so this ex, Vicky, who has the baby, they're still really good friends, and the way that he talks to her and about her, I think, is really respectful and sweet. And also because this becomes a recurring thing that his mum, and then she's passed this information on to the people at Nightlight, they want him to confess that he's the father of the baby and step up to his responsibility and marry Vicky and be the father to the kid. And there are obviously moments where this feels tempting, where he sort of feels like, well, you know, she's my friend, maybe I just do this and help her out. And he considers it. He sends a text to her when he and his mum have just had a row about it, being like, haha, maybe I should just pretend that it's true. And she's like, yeah, but you're gay, so this is not gonna work.
It's not gonna work out long term.
Yeah, and you don't get a lot of sense of her kind of perspective, but although you don't get anything from her point of view, I think Connor makes a real effort to consider her feelings and to respect the fact that she's in a really difficult situation as well, and that, you know, he doesn't want to use her and use her kid as an out for himself. And I really, really liked the way that was handled and the sensitivity with which that was kind of treated. Especially considering she's not like an active character in the plot, it would have been quite easy to brush over what she might want and what she might need. But the fact that the author made a point of considering that, I thought was really nice. So the only reason that he came out in the first place is because his boyfriend has been pressuring him to. So his boyfriend, Ario, has a much more supportive family. And so he's been kind of saying, oh, you'll feel so good when you do it. Also, you know, I want us to be able to be out together in public, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's another really interesting thing about the book, and a real strength of the book, that it grapples with the fact that it's not safe for everybody to come out. And there is kind of a move towards more people coming out. And I think that speaks to really beautiful things about how much social attitudes are progressing and how much more acceptance there is in the world. But it can be easy for people who are in safe situations to think that everyone should do it. And clearly not everyone is in a position where they're safe and comfortable to do it. And the book doesn't shy away from the fact that it's wrong to try and pressure somebody to out themselves in a situation where it may not be safe and comfortable for them to do so. So I thought that was an important aspect of the book. So there's that element. There's also the fact that you can see in some of the flashbacks, and also in the way that Connor talks about his relationship with Ario, that he has been struggling with a lot of internalized homophobia, and that it's got in the way of him kind of being intimate with his boyfriend. So, you know, one of the things that I really love about this book is that it tackles head on both the good and the bad of being a young man in love with another young man.
Yeah.
And they, you know, there are things that Connor loves about being with his boyfriend. When, you know, when they're not together, he wants to be with him. But when they are together, he struggles with that too sometimes. And he struggles with being okay with kissing his boyfriend because there's part of him that feels guilty about it and uncomfortable with it. Someone on Twitter not that long ago said, why are there not more books dealing with internalized homophobia? And I kind of wish I remembered who it was, because I wanted to be like, this is the book.
Yeah.
This tackles that absolutely head on. And I obviously, although I'm bi, I kind of came to that realization pretty late, and my family could not be less fussed about it. So there's a lot that I haven't had to deal with. So, you know, I don't have any sort of repressed guilt or shame about it. My feelings run in a different direction of kind of uncertainty about being married to a man. So like, for me, it's more, does it matter? Does it even count? But even though the feelings are so different, there's something really nice about seeing a character who's, you know, they're struggling with some aspect of their sexuality, but kind of coming through that and owning it completely and finding the joy in it as well, even though it's not always easy, that I thought was really beautiful to read. Which kind of leads me on to as we've covered, the book deals with some very, very dark topics, and the writing doesn't shy away from any of it. It's a lot of the writing is quite explicit and quite graphic in the good stuff as well as the bad, but there's a lot of bad to get through. So this could be a very difficult read for some people, and if you have difficult experiences with homophobia, then this might be one to be a bit wary of. So there's a lot of homophobic language, slurs, terrible attitudes towards gay people and queer people generally. There's violence to the point of murder. There is discussion of suicide in the book. There's transphobia. There's basically nothing that isn't touched on in terms of the dangerous and difficult and deeply upsetting side of being gay or trans or lesbian or bi or otherwise queer in an environment where people have decided that that's not okay, and that actually it allows them to treat you however they want to quote unquote cure you, and I guess make you into a proper person again. So that there's a lot in that sense. The tone of the book though is lighter than you'd think considering all that. Now, I think it's possible to find that jarring. And I think potentially if someone's coming to this book having dealt with some version of this, either with, you know, parents who weren't supportive, even parents who have tried to convert them to the straight path, or, you know, other similar situations, people who might have been attacked for their sexuality, it might be a difficult one, and you might have to kind of weigh up whether that's going to be triggering or traumatizing to read about, particularly in a situation where, because everything moves so fast and because the kids tend to have quite a, they have to be quite resilient. They're not in a situation where they can really sit with the horror of what they're going through. They have to just keep going. So I could see how you might think that it wasn't dealt with in a way that feels that sensitive to the individual events. That said, the author makes a point in, he sort of got an author's note that he opens the book with. The author says, "I promise you, the reader, in the pages of Surrender Your Sons, there's light in the dark. You'll find scary things in this book, but just like in life, when the trouble hits, you'll also find humour, good friends, and courage you couldn't imagine in your wildest dreams."
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful. The whole author's note is absolutely beautiful. If you're a person who normally skips author's notes, don't skip this one, because it's really, really touching. So, and that's how I felt reading it. I thought, you know, there's a lot of crap that these characters are having to deal with, but they're dealing with it together, and they're pulling together, and they're supporting each other. And it's kind of a real testament to the strength of a community and the strength of people who know themselves and are willing to, you know, look out for themselves and look out for each other. I think it's a deeply hopeful book. I can see how some people might disagree and think that actually the trauma outweighs the positives. But I thought ultimately it came to a really beautiful place of hope and mutual supportiveness. So yeah, I didn't want to overlook the fact that I know that for some people they might feel the balance is too skewed. I don't know if I ever laughed out loud, but I would say that the book is funny. It's got a lot of humour woven through it. Sometimes it's funny because you are laughing at Connor's terrible decision making. He has a tendency to kind of blurt stuff out at inopportune moments or go off-piste when it's probably not a good idea to do so. But I was quite fond of him, and I just sort of accepted that this is part of who he is. He doesn't always think things through, and that's fine. He's a teenager. There's so much that happens that obviously I'm not gonna go into specifics because I don't want to spoil it. One more thing just to be aware of, if it's a problem for you as a reader, there's some slightly dodgy relationship stuff. There's a sort of big age gap in one relationship, and there's some infidelity. It all contextually makes a lot of sense. The age gap was kind of dodgy, but that, I've seen some people complaining about that stuff, and I see why. But the age gap thing within the context of the story, it's not like celebrated. It's clear that this is a non-ideal situation. And yeah, it's a complicated book. That's the thing. There's a lot of very complicated stuff going on, and everything's coming at the characters thick and fast, and they're just rolling with it as best they can. I think it was a very exciting book. You, like I said, normally I have no problem kind of making notes as I'm reading, but I didn't even want to tear myself away from the page long enough to make notes on what I was reading and thinking. I just had to know what was happening next. And I don't normally get that swept up in books. I'll be into it, but not so into it that I can't tear myself away to write something down or think about it for a moment, but I just had to keep reading. So it was deeply, deeply absorbing.
Which is amazing for you. That's that you said, that's not something that you normally experience. No. So that's even better.
I definitely kind of came to the end of it feeling like it was a wild ride. And yeah, just super intense. Not always an easy read, not always a happy read, but boy, was it interesting.
At the beginning you said that there was a lot of genres, but obviously having read it twice, sort of thing,
one and a half times,
what do you think, if you had to place it in a bookshop, where do you think you'd place it?
Probably I'd say thriller. It's like a YA thriller, I think, first and foremost, but the romance elements are like right nipping at its heels in terms of which one is at the forefront. I'd say it's the thriller marginally would be, I think, the primary category from my point of view.
Was there something in the book that you found yourself completely breathless at? Not just romance, just a situation that just completely surprised you more than anything, because I know how hard it is to surprise you, and I know how hard that can be sometimes.
Yeah, no, there's one moment that comes to mind, which obviously I'm just trying to think whether I can say anything about it that kind of tells you. There's a moment where something quite tense and scary has already happened, and then there's a clue or something, someone realizes something, and it's that stomach clench moment of, but that means this.
Dum dum dum.
And my head went dum dum dum, and I think I held my breath for the next couple of paragraphs. It was, I'm literally getting chills even thinking about it. It was so tense.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's positive. And then my last question, stealing it from you, is did you have a justice award?
Did I have a justice award? So, okay, although I said, and I stand by it, that the kids, that the various characters at the camp are really well differentiated from each other, I would have liked to see more of them, though. I don't think there was room for it. The story was already absolutely stuffed to the brim, but fuck it, split it in two books. I'll read two books. Give me more of the campers, particularly the younger ones. The one that stood out the most was, I think, Jack, who is a trans boy, who is great. He's so kind of so confident, and he's got so much swagger. And then there are a few other kids who I just would have liked to see more of, I guess. Because I liked them. I liked them all so much. And I wanted to know that they were okay. But of course, a lot of the time they weren't because of the horrible, horrible situation they were in. So especially once we got towards the end, I maybe would have liked to see more of them.
Yeah.
But I think the author did a really good job with the time that he gave himself in the book. So I don't want to undermine that at all.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair.
So, right, in terms of seashell rating, I would give it 4.5 shells. It was so close to being 5, but there were just, it's because of my nitpicks. I was too, there were too many times where I was slightly pulled out of the story by a bit of phrasing that stuck out to me. And to be honest, I think it's entirely possible that someone else would read this and not be bothered by them at all, or all that because it was probably part of Connor's characterization that I should have just rolled with it, but those did pull me out a little bit. But I was quickly dragged right back in, and yeah, thoroughly. It's weird to say I enjoyed it because it's obviously a very challenging book in a lot of ways, but I did enjoy it.
Would you take it to your island library, Laura?
I would.
Yay! It's a double episode!
It's a double!
We've done it!
Yeah. I even just like skimming bits of it to look at what I wanted to say, I kept getting pulled back in. So I definitely am going to be reading it again. It might be a slightly, because obviously they're on a not a deserted, but they're on like a secluded island for their conversion camp. So it might be a bit of a spooky one for an island getaway.
An island.
But it's got so much going on. How could I not bring it with me? I mean, when you've got only got a limited number of books, you want one that's going to be part thriller, part mystery, part romance, part comedy, part crazy gay adventure. I loved it. I think it was really good. I think despite the stuff that I think could be difficult, it's just such a, I think it's a really strong book, and just, yeah, I'm kind of overwhelmed even just thinking about it.
So my last question is, I know you've obviously already read Opposite of Always, but based on the discussion and the pitch, would you have read Opposite of Always?
Yeah, no, I completely would have read it based on what you said. Okay. It sounded as good as I found it. So anybody who's listening thinking, should I be reading that? The answer is yes, you should. Pick up Opposite of Always ASAP. Would you be interested in reading Surrender Your Sons?
Okay, so, you know, I'm not like a big thrillery dark book person, but I definitely will be buying this book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, 100%. Because I've just got to know. And then I also may just then break the book down with you.
Yeah.
I may just like ring you and just be like, let's talk about
you,
this book.
If you get to if you think you know the bit that I was talking about where it gets super, super, super tense, you got to message me.
Yeah, I will do. 100%. And listeners, if you've got the book and you know what Laura's talking about, send us an email because we'll just mention you in the next episode. But that rounds up the two books for episode 16. So now, okay. So lovely listeners, if you can hear pause. It is my dog He's trying to get in. He wants to be a special guest.
He wants to be a co-host.
He does, but he's not allowed. I forbid him. Costs too much as it is. Never mind him. Get corgi headphones. But he has nicely said mean to Joe's random question of the week. And I've gone for something a little bit different. I'm trying to mix it up a little bit.
Okay.
So, do you judge an actual book by its cover? And do you judge theoretical books by their covers? So it's like a double question.
Okay, so I'm going to answer the other way around, because in general life, I try not to judge things by their appearance, with some exceptions, including actual books. The reason for that being that book covers are normally pretty carefully thought about, right? Like, they're not random. It's not like, you know, I didn't choose the way I look. So to judge me by the way I look would be unfair, right? Because although there are certain, like, I chose to dye my hair blue and I chose what I'm wearing, but like, my face is just my face.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But you take a cover like Surrender Your Sons, which clearly a huge amount of thought has gone into. This is a really, really interesting cover. So 100%, when I was interested in buying this book, when I looked at the cover, I thought, oh, yeah, I feel like that is leaning me further towards buying it, because it's a really interesting cover. It sort of obviously has elements of like the jungle thing going on. That looks really exciting. I want to read it. I'm a little bit less judgmental with sort of indie books, because I know that sometimes people don't have the resources to get a professional cover designer and to kind of go through a long cover design process. So I try to be less judging of the book by the cover in that case. It's hard though, because part of me is, as a book buyer, I am used to making certain decisions based on covers and thinking like, that does or doesn't look like my kind of thing, knowing that whoever designed the cover in most cases has put a lot of thought into how they're going to represent the contents of the book. So yeah, in general life, I try not to, but when it's stuff that has had a cover designed, then kind of, yeah, I do a little bit. How about you?
Same as you, sort of. In general life, no. And if I do, it's not consciously, but then I try to correct that. So, you know, I'm a little bit judgy when I'm in... when I'm food shopping, I get a bit judgy. Like, so if the smart price can looks a bit ugly, I might go for the more expensive can because it looks a little bit prettier. Because I kind of think, well, the contents are going to be nicer. In terms of people, the same as you, I feel the same. If there is any slight bit of judgingness, it's quickly over with, because the same as you, you can't choose. Like, my face is my face, my nose is my dad's. I have no choice. I would have rather opted for my lovely, lovely mother's nose, because she's got the cutest little nose.
Aww.
But books, I judge books so hard. Don't get me wrong. If someone says to me, oh, this book, you're going to love it, and the cover's like really UGLY, and I'm just like, ugh. If the person's like, no, I think you'll really enjoy the story, then I'll get past it. But if I'm in a bookshop, you better believe the fact that I will pick up a book purely 100%. Because the book's pretty and read the blurb.
Yeah.
Because if the book's ugly, I just kind of think, oh, where's that going to go on my shelf? And that's so horrible, I know. But now I have a Kindle, I'm thinking I could probably buy the uglier books on my Kindle. And I know that's really horrible, but I'm just being honest, because that's what we set out to do on this podcast, was to be honest. And I will say the prettier books are the ones that get shelved right at the front, and the less pretty ones get hidden at the back. And that's just how it's going to be. And, you know, but that is just with books. But that's mainly for the aesthetic, because I'm a book lover. B, I'm a bookstagrammer. And C, I run a book blog. So I feel like aesthetically pleasing things have to be at the forefront.
I think that's fair.
But yeah, that was Joe's random question of the week.
Happy days.
A different one.
That was a good one. I like that one.
It was. So lovely, listeners, just to make you aware, we are launching a book club where each month both your hosts will pick a book that you can participate with us on. We'll have a monthly book club and we'll highlight the episode in which we're going to discuss that. And we have an option now on our Patreon where you can join us for a more in-depth discussion if you want to be a part of our virtual book club. You may also get the opportunity to have Q&A sessions with us in the future. We also have a new website at theislandlibrary.com, and you can find us over on Instagram, where we are. I'm always on Instagram. It's the app that is my biggest social media downfall, but it's just so pretty. And I think that's everything from me. And I just want to say a huge thank you for doing this with me once again.
And you. Thanks for making time. It's been a great one.
It has been lovely.
Can't believe we both filled another slot today.
I know. See us next time to see what else goes on the shelf and when we'll need to start knocking them off into the sea.
Absolutely. Tension. Right. See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.